For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency.
Thank you for tuning in to the Frequency of the Past, home of the series Crime Doesn't Pay, where we focus on stories about cops, government agents, and lawyers, all with one theme in common. No one is above the law. If you enjoy this episode, please let me know through the usual ways. All those links can be found in the description. And if you enjoy this podcast, please don't forget to follow, review, leave a 5-star rating, and to share this podcast. Now with all that, please enjoy the show.
Tonight, Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters.
Name, Kenny Reynolds. Address, 1121 Dorchester.
Charge, murder.
The heritage that you and I share as Americans has been given to us by many great men, men such as Meriwether Lewis and William Clark. The winter of 1804 was a hard one. Gusts of snow whirled around horses and men that made up the Lewis and Clark expedition. Doggedly, they pushed westward across the plains of the newly organized Iowa Territory and through the Rocky Mountains. Day after day, Clark noted watersheds and trails while Lewis sketched them in on the map. Two more winters passed before they returned, but they had reached the Pacific and claimed the vast, sprawling Louisiana Territory for the United States. They had opened up a whole new country for those who would follow. Their courage helped to build your America. It's part of your American heritage.
Good evening. This is Dirk Fredericks, your host for Police Blotter, authentic dramas of police work and the constant battle that goes on night and day against crime. Tonight, Police Blotter brings to life an exciting story dealing with a phase of the theatrical world. So listen now as Murder on the Fourth Floor on Police Blotter.
I'm Brad Peters, Sergeant, Homicide. You ever been inside a police station? The phone rings, might be anything from disturbing the peace to murder. Whatever or whoever it is, rich or poor, innocent or guilty, sooner or later I get to know them all. Sergeant Peters, Homicide.
Howdy, Sergeant. I got a case for you. A genuine case.
What is it?
Murder. Just plain murder. You better come up here and take a look at the body.
Where are you?
1406 Street. You take your elevator, you get off on the fourth floor, and then you go down the hall to room 48. I'll be waiting inside for you.
What's your name?
Roy Downs. Come over right away, because I can't stay here long.
I'll be right over, Roy. Just stay put. 48, according to the printed letters on the door, was the office of Marvin Jackson, casting agent. As I approached it, the door opened.
Oh, howdy.
A 6-foot cowboy in buckskin pants, fancy embroidered blouse, and a 10-gallon hat motioned to me to come in.
Well, I'm glad to see you're kind of prompt, Sergeant.
Where's the body?
Well, this here is what they call the outer office. Now, behind that door there is a private office. You'll find him in there.
All right, come along.
Yeah. What for? I seen him already. You ain't afraid of a corpse, are you, Sergeant?
I just want your company.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll be glad to oblige. Yeah, that's the way I found him. Sitting behind his desk with his head down like he was taking a nap.
Mm-hmm. How did you know he was dead?
Well, I went over and touched him on the shoulder. When he didn't move, I shook him. And then his head fell back. He was shot through the heart.
Is that Marvin Jackson?
Ain't nobody else. He can't see a word now, but you should have heard him when he was alive. The smoothest talker I ever met up with. Why, he could talk an Indian out of his tomahawk.
Did you do any business with him?
Well, not yet, but he kept promising he'd make me another Will Rogers, you know, swinging a lariat and chewing gum and saying funny things, you know, like everybody's always talking about the weather, but nobody ever does anything about it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, in fact, now, I give him $200 to get a feller to write me those funny things. And then he was going to book me in a show.
Well, it looks like you lost out.
Well, that's what made me come up here. I was getting tired of being put off. I made up my mind he was going to give me that booking or give me my money back.
You quarreled with him?
Well, didn't have a chance. When I walked into his private office, he was dead.
Uh-huh. I imagine you're a pretty good shot.
Oh, hey, now, don't you go planting this on me. You can search me. I don't carry guns.
Could have tossed it out the window.
Now, that's just why I didn't walk out of here. I didn't want to be suspected. If someone saw me, they'd sure tell the police. I did the smart thing.
Maybe.
Oh, now, look here.
Was Sergeant. Anybody in this office when you came in?
It was empty.
How about his secretary?
Well, he runs this office all by himself. The show people sit in the outer office, and he calls them in one at a time.
Then there's no one to prove that he was dead before you came in, huh?
No. Hey, wait a minute. I just remembered.
What?
When I came off the elevator and walked down the hall, a girl came out of Jackson's office.
You know her?
No.
What did she look like? Tall or short? Fat, thin, young or old?
Oh, she was a young'un.
All right. What was she wearing?
Oh, I can't remember.
Roy, are you making this up?
No, I give you my word. I saw the girl coming out of Jackson's office. I did.
You don't remember a single thing about her?
Well, yeah. I guess I do.
What is it?
She had the prettiest legs I ever seen in New York.
Couldn't get any more out of Roy Downs. I decided to let him go. I told him not to leave town. I called the coroner. Then I searched Marvin Jackson's desk. I found a book listing his clients' names, telephone numbers. There were more than 100. It would take a year to investigate. On his desk, there was a daily calendar. On today's date, there was a notation. Juliana, theater. I went through his address book, and I found only one Juliana. That was under the M's. Juliana Montaigne. But before paying her a visit, I decided to check with the elevator men in Jackson's building. No one remembered taking down a girl from the fourth floor at the approximate time of the murder. But if Roy was telling the truth, the girl could have walked down the stairs. And the description was worthless. I headed for the fashionable district where Juliana Montaigne lived.
The police?
May I come in, Miss Montaigne?
Oh, how rude of me, of course.
Thank you.
I'm not accustomed to visits from the police.
I came to see you about Marvin Jackson.
Oh, is he in trouble again? I'll call my lawyer and have him bailed out.
Well, that's not quite possible.
Don't be silly. I can afford it. Perhaps you don't remember me, Sergeant. Doesn't the name Juliana Montaigne mean anything to you? I was a star when I was 20. Musical comedy. Retired now.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we must get Marvin out. We're going to the theater this evening.
So I gathered from his desk calendar.
Such a dear boy. He knows how to cater to a woman. Order the best food and the best wine, you know.
And you pick up the check, huh?
Certainly. I do so enjoy his company.
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Montaigne, you won't be enjoying his company anymore. Marvin has been shot. Killed.
Oh, dear. No, that's terrible, simply terrible. I was so looking forward to this evening. It was to be a sort of reunion.
Reunion?
You see, we had quarreled. He said he needed money. He wanted me to lend it to him, and I refused.
He came to you for money to pay off someone else?
Well, I didn't care about that. I never expected to get back what I loaned him. But he had broken his last two appointments with me. I found there was a young girl involved.
What was her name?
Gloria.
Mm-hmm. His second name?
I don't know.
He had been dating her?
Yes. I told him, frankly, if he didn't give her up, he'd get no more help from me.
And he gave her up?
So he said. That's why I bought the theater tickets. We were going to celebrate.
Miss Montaigne, have you any idea to whom he owed that money?
Not at all. But if that's why he died, then I'll never forgive myself for not helping him. You will try to find poor Marvin's murderer.
Yes, that's our business.
Of course. Oh, Sergeant.
Yes, Miss Montaigne.
It's a shame to have the theater tickets go to waste. Perhaps you'd care to be my guest?
Thanks, but I'm busy tonight. Goodbye, Miss Montaigne. Juliana didn't strike me as the type who would be jealous enough to kill. I decided to check on her story about Gloria. I went back to Marvin's office. I checked his black book. I found four Glorias listed, and I called the numbers. One was out of town with a show. One had gone back to Indiana. Another was working in a department store. And the fourth, Gloria Clinton, was at home. So I went over. She was a dark-haired girl, about 18.
Yes?
Are you Gloria Clinton?
That's my stage name. My real name is Gloria Beagle.
Uh-huh. What show are you in?
I'm not working now, but my agent's negotiating for a part in a new show.
Marvin Jackson, your agent?
How do you know?
Well, I found your name in his book.
You must have hundreds of names there.
When did you see Marvin last?
3 days ago. He asked me to meet him at a hotel. We went dining and dancing. We went to the Scarlet Slipper Club, and we drank real champagne.
Who paid the check?
Well, he did, of course. I told him he didn't have to take me to such expensive places.
Gloria, was that your first date with him?
Well, he took me out twice before, always to some fancy place.
You sure you weren't in his office today? Answer my question, Gloria.
No, I wasn't. He told me not to bother coming up. He said as soon as he got news about the new show, he'd call me. Is anything wrong?
Well, you better get yourself another agent. Marvin Jackson is dead.
Dead? He had an accident?
He was shot.
Shot? Well, who did it?
We don't know yet. But a cowboy saw a girl come out of Jackson's office. Girl with pretty legs. That description could fit you, Gloria.
Thank you. I mean, about having pretty legs. That's when Marvin sure he'd get me in a show, but I haven't been near his office for weeks.
Did he by any chance tell you that he owed somebody $500?
No, all we talked about was show business.
Mm-hmm. Gloria, what shows have you been in so far?
None.
You ever been on the stage?
No, sir.
Where you from, Gloria?
Alabama.
Been long in town?
About 3 months.
Did you give Marvin Jackson any money to get you a job?
Now, why should I do that? He's supposed to get me a job for free, and then I pay him 10%.
Okay, Gloria. I may get in touch with you again.
What for?
You never know. Leaving leaving Gloria, I had the same reaction as when I left Juliana. Gloria sounded innocent enough, but many a person with a face like a cherub is a murderer. And at the station house the next day, I got a call from Juliana. Said she had some important information. I went up to see her.
I'm sorry, Sergeant. I couldn't give you that information over the telephone.
Why not?
I just happen to value my life.
I don't get it.
Haven't you heard of wires being tapped?
Oh, I don't think you need worry about that. Well?
Remember my mentioning the fact that Marvin wanted me to lend him some money? $1,000?
Yeah, and you turned him down?
Yes. I know now why he needed the money.
Why?
To pay off a debt. He gambled, you know.
Who did he owe it to?
Frankie Hines, a racketeer.
Frankie Hines was a known muscle man, smooth operator. He hired the best mouthpieces, gave us the laugh when he beat the rap. Frankie had a suite of rooms in an office building downtown. A sign on his door said, Frank Hines, construction consultant. I told the girl I wanted to see him. A few minutes later, she ushered me into his private office. He was dressed to the hilt, big grin on his face.
Sergeant. Well, it's nice to have the police come in with their problems.
You might know the answer to this one, Frankie.
Always glad to cooperate.
You ever hear of a man named Marvin Jackson?
Marvin? Sure, I know Marvin. Gets me tickets for shows.
You ever play cards with him?
Sometimes. He's a scared gin rummy player.
What did he lose last time?
Oh, about 1,000. I blitzed him a couple of times.
When he couldn't pay, you blitzed him again. For good, huh?
I don't need money that bad.
You let him have it right through the heart. Bingo.
Such language, Sergeant. I'll prove it to you. Kenny! Kenny!
Who's Kenny?
One of my boys, Kenny Reynolds.
You call me?
This is Sergeant Brad Peters. He wants some information.
About what?
Marvin Jackson. You're going to give it to him.
I don't get you, Mr. Hines.
Were you in the office here when Marvin Jackson came up to pay me some money?
Oh, sure.
Let me take over, Frankie.
Go ahead, be the DA.
Kenny, how much money did Marvin Jackson give Frankie?
$950.
There you are. I've got a witness to prove he paid the debt.
Was it a check?
He gave Frankie 9 C notes and a 50.
Anything else you want to know, Sergeant?
Yeah. Would you have any idea who would want to bump off Marvin Jackson?
Nope. You come to the wrong place.
A girl came out of his office right after it happened. Do you know any girl who was sore at him?
He was quite a chaser.
This one had very pretty legs.
Well, one sure thing couldn't be my secretary. Sorry, you won't find anything here. This is a legitimate business office with homely secretaries.
Every lead ended up at a stone wall. I'd have to check every name in Marvin Jackson's book. As I thumbed through the pages, wondering where to start, the phone rang at the station house. Sergeant Peters, homicide.
Well, howdy, Sergeant. I got another case for you.
Who are you?
Well, don't you remember? I'm Roy Downs, a cowboy.
Oh, yeah. You are? What is it this time?
Just plain murder. You better come up here and take a look at the body.
Where are you?
Well, the address is 59 Quincy Street. I'll be waiting for you, Sergeant.
Hello, Roy.
Well, you came right fast.
How do you happen to be here?
I live here. I guess there's actors living in every room of this house. Just follow me.
Okay.
There she is.
Gloria Clinton.
You know her?
I spoke to her yesterday.
She was shot right through the heart.
You said the same thing when we looked at Marvin Jackson's body.
So I did, come to think of it.
Did you know her?
I never had the pleasure.
But you lived in the same house?
Oh, we just never met.
Were you the first to discover the body?
No, sir. It was the girl who lived in the next apartment. She screamed so loud, we all came running out. And when I saw what happened, I told them to leave it to me. I told them you were a personal friend of mine. Well, she went into this Gloria's room to borrow some bobby pins and found her this way, dead. I figured you'd want me to question her, so I did.
Oh, yeah. You're being very helpful, Roy.
I got something else to tell you, Sergeant.
What is it?
Take a good look at Gloria's legs.
What about them?
Ain't they the prettiest legs you ever seen?
What are you driving at?
Look, I got a feeling that those were the legs I seen coming out of Marvin Jackson's office. Yes, sir. I recognize them red shoes.
Seemed a strange coincidence that Roy Down should be present immediately after both murders. After sending for the coroner and leaving a patrolman in charge, I took Roy down to the station. I questioned him for hours, but I couldn't shake his story. The report came in from ballistics. The bullet that killed Marvin Jackson and the bullet that killed Gloria Clinton were fired from the same gun. So if Gloria was the girl who came out of Jackson's office, she must have found him dead when she got there. Why did she deny seeing him? Why was she murdered, too? I went back to search her apartment. Found a pack of letters with Alabama postmarks. One in particular interested me. It read, "Dear Gloria, I'm so glad to hear that you're not lonesome anymore. That young man you wrote about, Kenny Reynolds, he sounds like a real nice young man. I wish you would send me a picture of him. All my love, Mother." Kenny Reynolds was that young punk I met in Frankie Hines' office. It'd be a real pleasure to talk to him again. I started over to Hines' place. As I neared the office building, I saw Kenny approaching a taxi that was idling at the curb. I shouted at the top of my voice, "Hey, Kenny! Wait a minute!" He turned his head, recognized me, and jumped into the taxi. And off it went. Another cab drove up to take that spot in front of the building, and I jumped in. I told the driver to follow Kenny's cab. Chased him for more than a mile, down one street, up another. Then he turned a corner. By the time we reached there, Kenny's taxi was at the curb. Kenny was running into an alley. I jumped out of my chair. "Stop, Kenny, or I'll shoot!" I fired in the air, and Kenny didn't stop. I ran after him. It was into the warehouse he went. And it took a few seconds to get accustomed to the darkness. "Why did you run, Kenny? I got a few questions for you about Gloria."
"You'll never get me."
"Drop your gun, Kenny. I'm out of there with your hands up."
"Don't make me laugh."
"You've got to get closer."
"Shut up."
"You like to drill them through the heart, don't you?"
"I'll get you the same way, copper."
"Like you did Marvin and Gloria? Kenny, I'm coming after you."
"Come on."
I stepped behind a stack of barrels piled on top of one another. I held my gun in one hand, and with the other I toppled them. As I expected, Kenny fired. I watched for the flash of his gun, and then I pulled the trigger.
"My arm! My arm!"
Kenny was on the ground, holding his arm.
I'm bleeding to death."
"Oh, you won't die so easy."
"Hey, where are you going?"
"I got your gun."
"Call a doctor, do something for me. I'm bleeding to death."
"Like all the punks.
Please.
You can't take it, huh? Come on your feet, Kenny boy. We'll patch you up nice and pretty for the trial." "Name?"
"Kenny Reynolds."
"The address?"
1121 Dorchester.
"Charge? Murder." At the trial, Kenny admitted he had given Marvin Jackson $1,000 to advance Gloria's career on the stage. When Marvin failed to get her a part, Kenny demanded his money back. Marvin laughed at the idea, so Kenny killed him. Knowing Kenny's intentions, Gloria went to Marvin's office to warn him. But she was a little too late. And Kenny feared that Gloria might report him to the police. So he killed her, too. Jury brought in a verdict of guilty of murder in the first degree. Kenny paid the penalty. Signed, Sergeant Brad Peters, homicide.
You have just heard Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters. The cast included Roger DeCoven, Peter Fernandez, Elaine Rost, Nancy Sheridan, and Lawson Zerbe. Tonight's drama, Murder on the Fourth Floor, was written by Ed Ettinger and directed by Clark Andrews.
Police Blotter has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
How do you do? This is Clive Crook. Today I want to tell you something about the special branch of Scotland Yard. I expect you've heard of it. Judging from some detective novels, you'd imagine it consisted of a group of super Sherlock Holmeses who are called in when everything else has failed. But that is not true, is it, Percy?
No, Clive. The special branch of Scotland Yard is a unit of a couple of hundred men who specialize in political crimes. They differ from their colleagues of the Criminal Investigation Department in that they must be able to speak several languages.
In fact, the function of the special branch, in official language, is to guard the security of the state.
Or, as the boys themselves put it, to clear up political nuisances.
So today, a special branch man may find himself guarding the king or the prime minister, probing the antecedents of political refugee who seeks the protection of British nationality, tracking down the perpetrators of a bomb outrage, or sauntering among the guests at a royal garden party.
Clive, why don't you tell them the story of the absent-minded professor?
All right, Percy, I will. It's a story which shows the far-reaching significance of political crime and how, wherever an international conspiracy may start, sooner or later its tentacles will come within the reach of the long arm of the special branch of Scotland Yard. Ottawa, Canada, September 1945. One war is over, but for at least one of the great powers, another war, a secret war of information, a nerve war, has never ceased. It is late in the evening, and the offices of the Canadian Ministry of Justice are almost deserted. The last few employees are on the way home, and one of the officials is evidently trying to get rid of a late visitor.
Coming in to see us, sir, but I'm afraid there's really nothing I can do about it. Why don't you write us a letter?
But you don't understand.
But I'm very sorry, sir, but I'm afraid I have to go now. Okay. Thanks for calling
me. But please.
I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
Phew, I thought I'd never get rid of that guy.
What do you want?
Oh, some screwball. Said he came from the Soviet embassy. Wanted to show me some secret documents.
You're kidding.
No, but I guess he was. Tried to tell me all about some fifth column. Crazy guy.
What's his name?
Oh, I don't know. Here. Here's a slip he sent in. Ooh. Igor G.O.U. Gozenko.
Igor Gozenko, 25-year-old cipher clerk, employed in the code room of the military section of the Soviet embassy in Ottawa. Igor Gozenko, a man whose story was to shock the world, a man whose information was to bring to justice traitors of three nations who'd endeavored to betray the Allies' greatest secret, the atom bomb. But this September night, Igor Gozenko is finding it very hard to tell his story. Nobody believes him. And yet all the time he knows that at the Soviet embassy, his desertion will have been discovered. Already his one-time colleagues will be moving into action against him. What can he do? To whom can he turn?
Inspector McLean. Where? Who's that? Gozenko's. Well, who are these guys breaking in? Hmm? From the Soviet embassy. Searching the place, eh? Well, listen, have you traced Gozenko? Oh, you picked him up. Oh, he wanted to be arrested. Well, don't blame him. Well, now, listen, hold on to Gozenko and all his papers. Get hold of his family and don't let anybody see him. Yeah. Well, move him out of town and come back to me for instructions. Now, remember, nobody must see Gozenko.
In a matter of hours, it was clearly established that not only were Gozenko's documents genuine, but that they included copies of four recent and secret telegrams exchanged between the British and Canadian governments on highly confidential matters.
And realizing the complete freedom which exists in Canada, and convinced that the Communist Party in democratic countries has changed long ago from a political party into an agency net for the Soviet government, a fifth column in these countries to meet a war, I decided that I could no longer serve my government, but must at last speak the truth.
The Canadian police authorities found in Gozenko's documents a fascinating story of how, in secret code, the Soviet military attaché in Ottawa had given information and received instructions from Moscow.
Message to Zavotil, Ottawa. Your immediate objectives are 1. The atomic bomb, its composition and technological processes. 2. A sample of uranium-235. 3. The library and secret documents of the National Research Council. 4. Latest developments of electronic fuses for shells, radar, and a super explosive known as RDX.
Moscow. Facts are given by Alec. 1. The test of the atomic bomb was conducted in New Mexico. The bomb dropped on Japan was made of uranium-235. 2. Alec handed over to us a sample of uranium-235. 3. Alec has also reported brief data concerning electronic shells. There is in the shell a small radio transmitter with one electronic tube, and it is fed by dry batteries. The body of the shell is the antenna.
Moscow to Sabota. Work out and telegraph arrangements for the meeting and password of Alec with our man in London.
In Moscow. Alec will work in King's College, Strand. Meetings, October 7, 17, 27. On the street in front of the British Museum. In time, 11 o'clock in the evening. Identification sign, a newspaper under the left arm. Password, best regards to Makel.
But even Moscow realized that their boys in Britain might have rather a busy evening identifying Alec from the number of Londoners with newspapers under their arms in Museum Street at 11 o'clock in the evening. They replied,
arrangements not satisfactory. Correction. Facing British Museum. Intersection Great Russell Street, Museum Street. Time, 8 o'clock, October 7, 17th, 27th. Identification signs. Alec will have under his left arm the newspaper Times. The contact man will have in his left hand the magazine Picture Post. Convey instructions to Alec.
Convey instructions to Alec. Who was Alec? The Canadian police authorities at once placed the facts of this alarming leakage of atomic secrets before Prime Minister Mackenzie King. Realizing the grave implications of the plot, Mr. King hastened to Washington to acquaint President Truman with the situation. 4 days later, the Canadian Prime Minister crossed the Atlantic and repeated the story to British Premier Mr. Clement Attlee. Officials of British military intelligence were called to Downing Street. The investigation was entrusted to Lieutenant Colonel Leonard Burt. Burt, a pre-war yard chief, was seconded to the War Office at the beginning of the war for anti-sabotage work. Incidentally, today he's back at the yard in command of the special branch. The colonel's immediate and priority mission was to identify Alec.
Well, I don't expect we shall have much trouble finding out who Alec is. Our main problem is going to be to get him, to find out how much he knows, and even more important, how much he has told.
Yes, sir.
Well, let's have a look at those cables again. Here we are. Alec will work in King's College, Strand. Give him the phone directory.
Here we are, sir.
Thank you. Okay. King's College, Temple Bar, 5651. Well, hello, King's College. Now, put me through to the principal's office, will you? Thank you. Oh, hello. This is Lieutenant Colonel Burt of the War Office. I wonder if you could help me. It's just a routine inquiry. I want to know whether you have on your staff at the moment a physicist who has recently worked in Canada. Yes, that's right. Oh, up to a few months ago? You have? Oh, good. I see, yes. Yes, that's right. He went with a research group on a project in Montreal, and he's just come back to London. Good. What's his name? Dr. Nan May. Thank you, that'll be all. Oh, sounds like our man.
And October the 7th looks like our day, sir.
4 days from now, we'll have to get busy.
As October the 7th approached, a number of well-built but unobtrusive men began renting rooms in Museum Street. Rooms with first-floor windows which looked out onto the forecourt of the British Museum. In this and many other ways, known only to MI5 and the special branch, every inch of the place of rendezvous was covered by one or two observers.
Inspector Burt?
Sergeant Wilson here, sir.
All right, Wilson. I know you haven't seen him.
Not a sign, sir.
That's not surprising. I've just had a report from the man who shadowed him from King's College. He left there at 6:30, went straight home, had supper, and according to his last call, he's now sitting in front of the fire, doing guess what?
Search me, sir.
Playing patience.
Playing patience. And if anybody knows how to play patience, it's the men of the special branch. On October the 7th, they drew a blank, but they still had two more chances. Dr. Nan May was shadowed constantly, but always unobtrusively. On October the 17th and again on the 27th, the watchers by the British Museum kept their vigil. But Dr. Nan May did not keep his appointment.
It's no use, Wilson. He must have been warned.
Do you think he's suspicious, sir?
Oh, he may know he's being watched, but I don't think so. Not yet, anyway.
What do you mean, not yet, sir?
I think it's about time Dr. Nan May and I had a little talk. I'm going round to King's College. How do you do, Professor? My name is Burt, Inspector Burt of Military Intelligence.
How do you do? Military Intelligence, did you say?
No, that's right. I don't want to waste your time, Professor, so I'll come straight to the point. Are you aware that there's been a leakage of confidential information in Canada relating to atomic energy?
Really, Inspector? I don't know what to say. Certainly, it's the first I've heard of it.
The first you've heard of it?
Of course, I must say, Inspector, that I don't read the papers very much.
I wasn't suggesting that you'd have read it in the papers. I was wondering whether you'd had some first-hand knowledge.
What do you mean, Inspector?
Just this. I want you to answer one or two questions for me. During the period you spent in Canada in connection with the Atomic Energy Commission,
Were you approached at any time or by any person to give information concerning your work?
Certainly not. And I think I should say, Inspector, that if the Department of the War Office you represent is concerned with counter-espionage or anything of that nature, I'm not prepared to answer any of your questions.
But you do say that you were not approached and did not give any information whatsoever.
That is correct.
Inspector Burt sensed that despite his answers and his bold front, the little professor was rather worried. When the special branch finds that a suspect is worried, they usually proceed to worry him just a little more.
All right, Wilson. There are your instructions starting tomorrow. I want the men in Stafford Street and everybody who's covering Nan May to change their technique. So far, their aim has been to be as unobtrusive as possible. From tomorrow, I want Dr. Nan May to know that he's being watched.
So the men of MI5, under the direction of Inspector Burt, began the next phase of the war they were conducting against the little professor. In the next few days, the shadowing was performed in a manner scarcely creditable to the reputation of Scotland Yard. Meantime, a message had been sent to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who were instructed to inquire how closely Dr. May's travels had fitted into the pattern outlined for Alec in the cables which had been intercepted between Moscow and Ottawa.
Royal Canadian Mounted Police to Burt, Special Branch, Scotland Yard. Information supplied by Dr. John Douglas Cocroft, Chief of the Atomic Energy Project at Montreal, shows Dr. May made several trips to the nuclear research laboratories of the Manhattan Project at Chicago, coinciding entirely with the reports from Alec. Dr. May left for England within a few days of his last trip to the research laboratories and is scheduled to return for a month's work next year. Everything checks up with the information in our possession concerning Alec.
Yes, and the signal goes on to say that no other scientist has followed the same schedule or is planning to return next year. Yes, everything fits. It must be Dr. Nan May.
Meantime, officials of the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation had entered the story. The information concerning Dr. May was sent to the headquarters of the Manhattan Engineer District in Washington, D.C.
One of the fundamental principles of United States military intelligence is that personnel on secret projects are entitled to know only as much as they require to carry on their work. Thus, months before, when the National Research Council of Canada had proposed that Dr. May be allowed to visit the United States for 1 month, the application had been placed before General Groves personally.
The general had sent for the file on Dr. May. It included the information that Dr. May had already visited the Chicago Atomic Research Laboratories 3 times. And that this third visit occurred between September 25 and October the 30th, 1944. He carried on extensive work in collaboration with other scientists in a highly secret and important new field. His work resulted in a research report in which he collaborated with an American scientist. To Groves, a fourth visit by May to the United States ran counter to security principles, for it would allow him to know too much of what was going on in widely separated projects. Accordingly, the answer had gone back, polite but firm, no. If vital secrets in the field of atomic energy still rest secure, credit must be given to General Groves' decision to bar Dr. May. For as the Canadian Royal Commission of Inquiry had stated,
the Soviets failed to obtain details on the structure of the atomic bomb only because there was no one in Canada who could tell them.
Not all this was in the future. Back in London in September 1945, Lieutenant Colonel Burt had still to complete his case against Dr. Nan May. After waiting for one more week, during which the professor must have been well aware that he was being shadowed by the Yard, the colonel went back to see the professor again.
So you see, Professor, I thought it would be a good idea if I came back to have another little talk with you.
Yes.
Yes. You see, I wanted to tell you that we know that you had an appointment to meet someone in the vicinity of the British Museum shortly after your return from Canada.
Well?
Who was that person? And why didn't you keep the appointment?
Yes, you're quite right. I didn't keep the appointment.
And who was the person?
When I came back to London, I decided to wash my hands of the whole business.
What business?
The matter this person was going to see me about.
It's no use, Professor. You see, we know too much.
I tell you, I have nothing more to say.
I think you will have something more to say. And I am quite prepared to wait until you are ready to say it.
I absolutely refuse. If you think you can persuade me into making some sort of statement...
Inspector Byrd didn't think. He knew. He realized that a man like Dr. Nunmay, conscious of the fact he was being followed, nervous and frightened, would in the end have to come clean. Well, Dr. Nunmay didn't tell the whole truth, but at least he started to tell part of the truth, and at the end of this interview, he gave a long statement.
About a year ago, whilst in Canada, I was contacted by an individual whose identity I declined to divulge. He called on me at my private apartment in Swale Avenue, Montreal. He apparently knew I was employed by the Montreal laboratory, and he sought information from me concerning atomic research. I gave and had given very careful consideration to correctness of making sure that development of atomic energy was not confined to the USA. I took the very painful decision that it was necessary to convey general information on atomic energy and make sure that it was taken seriously. For this reason, I decided to entertain a proposition made to me by the individual who called on me. After this preliminary meeting, I met the individual on several subsequent occasions in Canada. He made specific requests for information which were just nonsense to me.
What do you mean by that?
I could not understand what he was talking about.
Did he ask you for samples of uranium?
Yes, and for information generally on atomic energy.
And do you admit to giving him samples?
Yes. At one meeting, I gave the man microscopic amounts of U-233 and U-235, one of each. The U-235 was a slightly enriched sample and was in a small glass tube and consisted of about a milligram of oxide. The U-233 was about a tenth of a milligram and was a very thin deposit on a platinum foil and was wrapped in a piece of paper.
What else did you give him?
I also gave him a written report on atomic research as known to me. This information was mostly of a character which has since been published or is about to be published.
Anything else?
The man also asked for information about the American electronically controlled ACAC shells.
And what did you do?
I knew very little about these and so could only give very little information.
Anything else?
He also asked to people employed in the laboratory, including a man named Veal, but I advised him against that him.
And what did he give you?
He gave me some dollars.
How many?
I forget how many. He gave me a whiskey bottle. I accepted these against my will.
I see. And when was your last contact?
Before I left Canada. It was arranged that on my return to London, I was to keep an appointment with somebody I did not know. I was given precise details as to making...
What were those details?
I forget them now.
Why didn't you keep the appointment?
Because I had decided that this clandestine procedure was no longer appropriate in view of the official release of information and the possibility of satisfactory international control of atomic energy.
I see. Is that the end of your statement?
Yes. The whole affair was extremely painful to me. I only embarked on it because I felt that this was a contribution I could make to the safety of mankind. I certainly did not do it for gain.
So much for the professor's statement. The special branch of Scotland Yard had already unearthed more incriminating evidence.
Here we are, sir. I've made a summary of these papers that have come in from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
You did it. Oh, thank you. Let's see. Dr. Nunmay, etc., etc., etc. Ardent communist. Yes, just what I expected. I see they picked up eight of his friends in Canada. And do you see this, Wilson? Definite statements. The doctor visited other atomic projects at the request of the Soviet embassy. Well, I think our case is ready now. It's about time we brought in the director of public prosecutions. Bring in all the other files on the case.
And so it happened that a few days later, while Dr. Nunmay was lecturing a class of students at King's College on the subject of nuclear theory, he had a visit from the special branch.
And that, I think, brings us almost to the end of our work today. We have, of course, only touched upon one phase of the subject of nuclear theory. And I hope that tomorrow afternoon I shall have the chance of dealing with chapters 7 and 8 in the papers under discussion, and that we manage to collect a lot of ground. That will be all.
Excuse me, just one moment, please.
Yes, what is it?
You are Dr. Nanmei?
Yes.
I have a warrant for your arrest. I must warn you.
Yes. I was expecting something like this.
Well, if you'll just follow me.
And so Dr. Nanmei was not able to continue his lecture the following day, for he had a pressing appointment at Bow Street, where the following morning he was formally charged with
having for a purpose prejudicial to the safety and interests of the state communicated to some persons unknown certain information calculated to be directly or indirectly useful to an enemy, contrary to the Official Secrets Act of 1911.
At the Old Bailey, Mr. Justice Oliver said,
I have listened with slight surprise to some of the things learned counsel has put before me. The picture of you as a man of honor who had only done what you believed to be right, I do not take that view at all. How any man in your position could have had the crass conceit, let alone the wickedness, to arrogate to himself the decision of a matter of this sort, when you yourself had given your written understanding not to do it, and knew it was one of the country's most precious secrets, when you yourself had drawn and were drawing pay for years to keep your bargain with your country. That you could have done this is a dreadful thing. I think that you acted not as honorable man, but as a dishonorable man. I think that you acted with degradation. Whether money was the object of what you did, in fact, you did get money for what you did. It is a very bad case indeed. The sentence upon you is one of 10 years penal servitude.
Well, that isn't quite the end of the story, because after the trial, there were many protests that the sentence was out of all proportion to the magnitude of the offense committed. The Association of Scientific Workers issued a statement in which they declared,
we do not seek to justify Dr. May's breach of the Official Secrets Act, but we are convinced, from our knowledge of Dr. May, that his action was determined only by the principle that fundamental scientific data should have been shared with a country that was not only friendly, but a fighting ally. The only work in which Dr. May was engaged, and on which he could have been in a position to give unauthorized information, concerned fundamental scientific data relating to atomic energy. Dr. May had no connection whatever with problems of the construction of the atomic bomb, and could not have been able to reveal information on atomic bomb manufacture.
What about that, does he? Oh, and by the way, I was going to ask you, why do you call this the case of the absent-minded professor?
Because, Clive, while the professor may have been internationally minded about the secrets of atomic energy, you must remember he also gave away the secrets of electronic shells.
You've got something there, Percy. But you know what these absent-minded professors are? Which reminds me of a story.
Time's up, Clive.
Yes, I'm afraid it is. But I have to leave it until next week. Well, that's all for today. This is Clive Brook saying goodbye and pleasant dreams.
Enjoying this episode, please don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and to share the podcast.
Indictment. The story you're about to hear is from New York City and is based on stories of the criminal law with authentic procedures as detailed by Eliezer Lipsky, former Assistant District Attorney of New York. Attorney who directs criminal investigations, assembles facts and witnesses, builds the case to a just indictment.
Special Bureau, Detective Russo.
Who is district attorney who break up drug cases I read about in papers, please?
You want Mr. McCormick. Hold on. Ed, on four. Sounds like we're tuned in on the Acropolis.
Okay, Tom. This is Mr. McCormick. Can I help you?
No, I help you. You got pencil, paper?
Yes, who is this, please?
Never mind. You just write down Socrates Aristopoulos, 427 Morningside Lane.
427. What apartment?
4B. You go check camera case in Socrates' room. You'll find plenty of marijuana. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Did you hear that, Tom?
Yeah, I heard it, but I can't spell it. 4B at 427 is good enough for me. Wish they were all as specific as that on the tip.
But dig that crazy jazz. Mrs. Aristopoulos?
Yes, what is it?
Well, my name is Russo. I'm from the district attorney's office. This is Mr. McCormick. He's an assistant district attorney.
I do.
Police? You must got wrong place.
Well, that's all right, ma'am. We're just checking on some people who may have bought some cameras they didn't know were stolen.
Oh, man. My son Socrates just buy camera.
Would you mind if Detective Russo checked the number, please?
Of course not. You come in. Come in.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I turn off the phonograph. Socrates Roux. Plato's over there. My husband is patriotic Greek. He give them famous names, no?
Would you check, Mr. Russo?
Yes, sir.
I call my boys from the store, yes?
I take it they work for their father.
Oh, yes. But Socrates goes away to college next September.
Oh.
Genius. Big scholarship. Work with science. Atom.
Atomic energy?
Yes. Same like in Greek. Energia.
Mr. McCormick.
Excuse me a moment, Mrs. Aristopoulos.
You want I call Socrates?
Well, I'll let you know in a moment. What have you got, Tom?
See for yourself, Ed. Full of reefers.
Where were they?
Right in the camera case.
Something's wrong.
How so?
I hear Socrates is a genius-type scholarship student.
Proves nothing. Let's pick him up.
Hiya, Ma. What's for dinner? How's my girl?
Saved us the trouble.
Lucky you come. Police are here.
Police?
Socrates Aristopoulos?
Yes?
McCormick, District Attorney's Office, Special Bureau.
I don't get it.
Would you mind coming in here?
Hey, what is this?
Shut up, Plato.
Nothing, Pulakimo. It's only about the cameras.
What about it?
Come in and shut the door, please.
I don't understand.
It's just that I didn't want your mother to find out about this.
What is it?
Detective Russo here just found it in your camera case.
Well, what is it? Listen, what's going on here?
Marijuana.
You're joking.
Yeah, smell them.
How do I know what marijuana smells like? How do I know you didn't plant it?
That doesn't make sense. This detective and I came here on a direct tip. That's how we knew where to look.
But that's impossible. I don't believe it.
You deny possession of this drug?
Of course I do. For goodness sake, sir, I'm standing by to go to Rochester University on a full scholarship. My father's one of the most respected merchants in the Greek-American community. Our family... For Pete's sake, would I have a thing like that around? This is crazy.
All right, how about your brother? Does he have access to your room?
Of course he does. But Plato doesn't go for that stuff either.
What does he go for?
Books and theater and... Look, Mr. McCormick, this is just a horrible mistake. I respect your integrity as an officer, and I have to take your word, but it's just impossible.
Is this your camera case?
Yes, it is, but...
Did anyone else have access to this?
Well, no, but what would I be doing with...
All right. You better go along downtown with Detective Russo.
Downtown? What for?
The usual thing. Fingerprinting. Stand still, son.
Hey, you don't have to frisk me. What do you think I'm under arrest.
What do you think?
Mr. McCormick, what's my father going to think? Plato! Plato, go get Pa, quick! Plato!
Socrates, I'm going to level with you. You're in a pack of trouble.
Mr. McCormick, I swear that marijuana wouldn't know what to do with it if it did.
Sir, I'm a science major. Don't you think I realize what marijuana is?
Suppose you tell me.
Why, it's nothing but hashish. Cannabis indica. Do you think I could have made Phi Beta in physics and gotten a full scholarship at Rochester University if I were a hashish addict? Can't you see it's just plain impossible?
The fact remains that it was in your possession.
Mr. McCormick, you've been very fair with me. And I appreciate the fact that you have to go on what you've got, but... Look, you say that you got a tip that the marijuana was in my room.
More specific than that. In your camera case.
All right. Now, please don't take offense at this, but I'm going to overlook the fact that you made an illegal search of my room without a warrant. Because I'm just as anxious to get this straightened out as you are. And the question is, who was that tipster?
We've gone through this before. Are you sure you don't have any enemies?
Mr. McCormick, I've been too busy studying to make any friends or enemies.
You haven't been dating some girl behind somebody's back, somebody's wife?
Absolutely not. I've been working up lab papers, writing my thesis, going for interviews with various graduate faculties. Mr. McCormick, this thing can ruin me. Kill my father.
All right, let's put it this way. Let's accept for the moment that for some obscure reason of your own, you did purchase that marijuana.
No, sir. Absolutely untrue.
For experimentation, perhaps.
No, sir.
I say let's accept the fact for the moment. Now, I won't promise anything. But if you were to tell me where you got it, it'd be much more important to knock over a source of supply than an individual user. Well, what do you say, Socrates?
I say I've heard of people being trapped like this and having no answer to anything but the plain, ordinary truth. I didn't do it. But I never thought it could happen to me. Mr. McCormick, so help me God.
Special Bureau, Russo.
Mr. Russo, will you tell Mr. McCormick that Mr. Aristopoulos is outside?
Which one, Miss Levinson?
Evangelos.
Now, hold on. Ed, the boy's father's outside. You want to see him?
Oh, all right.
Send him in, Miss Levinson. How's he going to take it?
I don't know, Tom, but what else can we do? The kid's record is clear. He hasn't an enemy in the world who would have called in a revenge tip. I still have to go with what I've got. Come in.
Mr. McCormick.
Yes, Aristopoulos.
Mr. McCormick, your father.
Please,
thank you.
Aristopoulos, you'll have to let the law take its course.
Sir, what will happen to my boy?
Well, unless he gives me the source of that marijuana, he'll be arraigned in felony court charged with possession of narcotics.
And then?
You can apply for bail, and he'll be held for special sessions.
And if he's found guilty, jail. And if he's found innocent, a wonderful boy is dragged through the mud.
Well, if he's found innocent, I don't think it'll be held against him. But I don't think he'll be found innocent.
Aman, you are killing my life.
Have you spoken to the boy? I've tried to persuade him that honesty is the best policy for him. Frankly, we're not so much interested in the occasional user of drugs as we are in their source of supply.
You mean the big man in marijuana, you let my boy go?
Nothing of the kind. I mean that some cooperation on his part will enable me to handle the case much differently before the court.
He's hopeless.
I'm afraid so. Mr. Russo has been investigating your son for the last couple of days, and his record is perfectly clean.
A fine boy, a wonderful boy.
I agree, but just the same.
Mr. Russo, does Mr. McCormick want to talk to Mr. Aristopoulos?
Excuse me, please, Mr. Aristopoulos.
He's right here already.
Plato Aristopoulos.
What is it, Tom?
The other boy's outside.
All right, I'll see him.
Send him in, Miss Levinson.
Mr. Aristopoulos, that was your other son.
What does he want?
I don't know. Don't you?
My God. What is happening to my family?
Come in.
Mr. McCormick. Pa.
Blood, I'm going crazy.
I know, Pa. I just want to... Mr. McCormick.
Yes?
Have you got a place where I can talk to my father alone?
Certainly. Go right in there.
I don't understand what is going on. What are you doing down here? Who is at the store?
Oh, I closed the store. This is important. Come on, I want to talk to you.
Turn up the volume, Tom.
You know something about Segretti?
Yes, fine. I know he's more important than I am.
But what kind of talk is this? Important, not important. Both of my sons I love. Both of my sons are important. What are you saying?
I'm saying, Pa, I'm just enough. I'm going to spend the rest of my life dreaming about being on the stage and fucking out in school and end up behind the counter at the store.
But you're too crazy. What has this to do with Socrates?
You love him better.
What are you saying?
You're proud of him. You talk about him all the time. Well, he's going to be a big man. You know that. Well, I don't want to see your heart busted on account of this. Pa, I'm going back in there and tell him it was my tea.
Tea?
Well, I'm going to tell him it was mine.
Why? Why?
Don't you see, Pa? For the lift sock off and give him a clean record. What does it matter what happens to me?
But it is not your marijuana.
No.
You would do this for your brother?
No, not for him, Pa. Got to be honest with you. All my life, I've been standing in his shadow. But I got to be honest. You mean a lot more to me than him. And if I got to go to jail so he can get off and be a big man, that's okay with me so long as you don't get hurt.
Oh, you can't. You love me so much?
Pa, you don't know. You don't know.
Oh, Plato, Plato.
There's that word again, Aman. Aman.
Plato, Plato, my brave boy, my wonderful
boy. Oh, it's all right, it's all right. Just a couple of years and I'll be out. They won't hold a jailbird brother against Sock.
Ach, Sebu, if I ever done you wrong, may I cut off my hand.
Come on, Parmit. Get it over with.
Well, that does it. I can't take that plea, though.
Hey, I got a hunch.
Shave it. Mine's hotter.
Mr. McCormick, my son... Let me call it. Mr. McCormick, my brother Socrates.
No, I cannot...
Please,
you.
I know what I'm doing. Listen, Mr. McCormick, Sock's innocent. That was my stash of tea.
Really?
Yes, sir, I swear.
Are you sure you know what you're doing?
I know my brother's innocent. He doesn't know from marijuana any more than the man in the moon.
Let me ask some questions, Plato. You say that was your marijuana.
Yes, sir.
Where did you get it?
No, I cannot let them do this, please.
It's all right, Mr. Aristopoulos. Go on, Plato. Name your source.
Fat Henry.
Where does he hang out?
He operates out of a record shop on 43rd Street.
What's he look like?
He's a mountain of fat, three chins, clothes like a circus tent.
All right.
Last week?
Sorry. I personally sent Fat Henry up for 5 years last month.
Oh, no, I took from him up until then, see. This was something I had left over. I mean, he left it at the shop for me.
A drop, huh?
Yes, sir.
And then what?
Sir?
What did you do after you bought it?
I went home and planted it in Socrates' camera case.
You're sure?
So help me.
Why?
Never mind, I was afraid the record shop might have been watched, and I might have been tailed or something, so I stashed it where nobody think of looking.
Mm-hmm. Plato, do you ever have tea parties in your room?
Sir?
Do you and your friends ever smoke marijuana in your room?
Mr. McCormick, I cannot let the boy do this. It's all a terrible mistake, please. You don't want these little boys, you want the big men. The men who sell them the marijuana, and behind them, the men who smuggle it. Is it right? Is it true?
That's true, Mr. Aristopoulos, but if you only wait a moment...
No, not one moment more. Plato, I forbid you to say another word. Mr. McCormick, I must talk to you alone.
All right, Mr. Aristopoulos. Mr. Russo, would you take Plato into that room and get the rest of his story?
Yes, sir.
Mr. McCormick, I give you the biggest smuggler in the world for marijuana.
I can use him, Mr. Aristopoulos, but first things first.
A deal, Mr. McCormick, a deal. If I give you big man, you let both boys go, I prove to you that both good boys, both innocent, one ready to sacrifice himself for brother.
I can't promise anything, but I'd be willing to hear your story.
is very simple. It's the story of a Greek who makes a lot of money smuggling, then gives up, lives honestly, until his sins catch up with him and his own sons have to pay.
Who are you, Mr. Aristopoulos?
Nick the Greek. Smuggler no country ever catch.
Nick the Greek? Are you a legend?
I don't know what legend means, but I'm real.
Can you prove it?
I can do better than that. I let my friends know I'm back in business, and I tell you how to knock over every ship that comes in with the drug.
Prove you're Nick the Greek. Prove it.
All right. I mentioned one ship. The Canyons, right?
Right.
Just before the war, right?
Mm-hmm.
Inspectors go over both with fine tooth comb, right? Find nothing.
That's right.
But what was the Canyons carrying, I ask you?
You tell me.
Shoes. Greek slippers. Thick leather soles. Where's my briefcase? Okay. Like this. This is one of those shoes, Mr. McCormick. I keep this around. I don't know why. Maybe for insurance in case I got broke. Maybe to show I stamp on the dirty business now, I am free American citizen. Here, look, examine.
Plain, ordinary Greek peasant slipper. All right, you tell me, Mr. Aristotle.
You take this slipper to federal people. You think leather glued together?
It's laminated, all right.
But the glue. Mr. McCormick, marijuana is hashish, sap from hemp plant.
Mm-hmm.
Nick the Greek invent this glue made from pure marijuana sap. Scrape it off. You got plenty of marijuana.
Devilish.
Yes. Yes, I was devil once. Now my sin catches up with my own sons. Enough? Enough to prove?
Enough, yes, but Mr.
Wait, I promise you, you break the whole racket from Near East when Nick the Greek goes back into business. Then you let my boys go?
Mr. Aristopoulos, or Nick, whichever you are, you're trying to sacrifice yourself for your boys.
It's no sacrifice, Mr. McCormick. Nick the Greek is no good to you in jail, but outside, knocking off the smugglers is very useful. For this, it is worth turning loose my two wonderful boys. Believe me, Mr. McCormick, believe me, I am smart, too. I know statute of limitations is run out against my crime of smuggling, so it's really nothing you can do against me but to save my wonderful boys. What is the matter? You look at me. Mr. McCormick, please.
The statute of limitations on smuggling has run out, Nick. But how about your naturalization?
What
will Uncle
understand.
Sam say when he finds out, and it's my duty to tell the Immigration Department, that a naturalized citizen has falsified his application and changed his name?
Huh?
Mr. Aristopoulos, Nick the Greek was a wanted known criminal. And if you were that man, the United States does not want you. You'll be deported.
Fox Amos! What have I done? Mr. McCormick!
You've ruined your family irreparably unless...
And Plato!
Plato! Let me show you the kind of boy you raised in him. Mr. Russo, bring Plato in here, huh?
Yes, sir.
All right, Plato, why'd you do it?
Why, to hide the stuff where nobody
found it. That's not what I meant. Why did you frame your brother?
No! I didn't mean to frame him. How'd you find out?
You admitted you stashed the stuff in his camera case?
Yes.
Well, who else could imitate a Greek accent well enough to give an anonymous tip over the phone and make it stick? Oh, come on, kid. Why'd you do it?
I don't know. It was a crazy idea. No. You might as well know. He was always Socrates, the genius, the wonder boy. Socrates makes five babes. I flunk. Socrates gets to go to college. Do I get a chance to go to dramatic school to make something out of myself? Oh, no. I'm nothing. Just good enough to work in the store.
So I figured a way to get Pa on my side for a change. Yeah. And to do that, I figured if you got Socrates and I went to bat for him... what's the use? He's innocent. And I stole the marijuana from Fat Henry's cash.
Oh, you did all this? A plan? Sacrifice yourself for Socrates? So I would love you.
That's about the way it was, Pa.
I'm sorry, Steve.
Maybe I'd better go to jail. You and Sot just forget about it. Live your life. Forget about me.
Mr. Mikormik.
Sorry, Mr. Aristopoulos. Mr. Russo, take
no.
Mr. Aristopoulos over to narcotics and let them check his story out. I'm sorry. It's out of my hands.
I don't get it. Where are they taking you, Pa? What about Sot? What about me?
I'll tell you later, Plato. But right now, let's leave it at this. Trying to build yourself up. You may have ruined your brother's chances for a future. You may have ruined your father.
Avon.
And you're getting a fingerprint record.
Pa! Please, Mr. McCormick. What's it all about?
You're under arrest for possession of narcotics.
What's going to happen to me?
I don't know. All I know is that your father tried to sacrifice himself for you. No matter how it turns out, you weren't worth it. Well, send your brother Socrates home to your mother. She'll need him.
Here it is, Ed. First time I ever knew we had this dictionary in the library. Wait a minute.
Spell it. Yeah, let me find it. Ah, here.
Huh?
Yeah, here we are. Aman.
Yeah.
Expression of sorrow, woe, alas. Well, that sums it up. Alas.
Just heard was drawn from New York City and based on stories of the criminal law as detailed by Eliezer Lipsky, former assistant district attorney. The name Indictment is written by Alan Sloan, produced by Nathan Kroll, and directed by David Hebb. Nat Polan is featured as Edward McCormick, Jack Arthur as Tom Russo. Also in the cast were Joe DeSantis, Kivele Aliki, Barry Robinson, Peter Fernandez, and Ruth Tobin. Listen next week at the same time for another Indictment.
In the name of the law, we bring you another of the thrilling stories in this exciting series, taken from actual police case files.
Our story begins in the town treasurer's office of High Springs, Florida.
Town clerk's office, Miss Collins speaking. Oh, yes, Mr. Britton. Well, that tax payment is due for the 5th of the month. Not at all. Goodbye.
Is this the chief of police's office, ma'am?
No, it's down the hall on your right.
That's Mr. Burton's office, ain't it?
Yes, Officer Burton, chief of police.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Oh, excuse me, ma'am.
Well, Bonnie, what's troubling you? Oh, it's this job. What do you expect, being town clerk and treasurer all in one? I'm getting a job as waitress. That'll satisfy me. Now what are you doing?
Oh, I've got to fire up the stove before I go out to lunch.
You're up. Maybe you'll get an appropriation for an oil burner.
Yes, maybe. This town is still too poor to afford such luxury. I'll just have to use this enormous wrench and break my own coal and back, I guess.
There. Come on, how about us having lunch together?
I'm sorry, Helen, but I promised Mother I'd go home and have lunch with her.
Well, come on and walk the corner with me then.
No, I'm sorry, I can't. I've got to make a phone call. It's very important.
Well, I'll see you tonight.
So long.
So long.
Cherry, 243, please. Yes, 243. What was that? There's no answer. Operator, there must be an answer. It's very important. doesn't answer. Oh, my heaven. What can I do? Hello, operator. Will you try main 388, please? Hello. Hello, is this main 388? Is Mr. Hunter there? Oh, when do you expect him? In half an hour? No. No message. That will be too late. Oh. What are you doing? Oh, don't. Ah!
What's going on in here? Drop that cash box until you're on fire.
Bonnie, look at me. Oh, but I got him, Bonnie. I got him for you. Help!
Help, quick!
Yeah, what's the matter, Artie?
Tell you
the gun.
I just shot a strange colored man. He was murdering Bonnie Collins.
What, Marie?
Yes, Bonnie.
Is she dead?
I'm afraid so, but maybe she isn't. Come on, will you help me? Get a doctor. Come on.
Now, suppose you tell us again exactly what happened.
Well, all right, Coroner.
Now, wait just a minute. Men, we've marked the spot where the victim fell, right over here by her desk. And here's the body of Lee Walker, just as he fell by the counter here. Now, Artie, you were on duty in your office next door when this happened?
Yeah, that's right. I heard kind of a commotion in here, and I jumped right up and ran down the hall. When I opened the door there...
Yeah, go on, Artie.
When I opened the door, I saw a man. His back was to me. But I saw he was beating Bonnie Collins over the head with that wrench there.
Now, man, you see this wrench? It's a heavy wrench used here in the office to break up lumps of coal for the stove. Go on, Artie.
Well, I saw this man hitting Bonnie over the head with that wrench. And I saw her cash box open there. It looked to me like Bonnie had been putting up a fight to keep him from that money.
All right, then what happened, Artie?
Bonnie fell, and this man reached for the cash box. I yelled to him to drop it. And he ran for the window there, and I shot him. Twice in the back.
Go on, Artie.
I knelt down by Bonnie for a minute. I saw she was hurt pretty bad. Then I ran out. I got Landy Chu and Abe Deloach. And they came back with me and helped me to get a hold of Dr. Goode.
Victim taken to Lakeshore Hospital. All right, Artie. Now, when did you first know it was Lee Walker you'd shot?
Well, after we first looked after Bonnie, why, we turned this fella over so we saw his face.
Surprised to find it's Lee Walker, huh?
I sure was. One of the best-natured fellows you ever wanted to meet. Why, he'd want to murder town clerk and treasurer for a few dollars.
And never mind, Artie. I know how you feel. You saw a hold-up murder going on. The man, chief police, you did your duty.
Well, I think there's such a way to figure it out,
yeah. Well, man, as coroner's jury, are you prepared to render a verdict?
Sure.
Mr. Chu, what's your verdict?
That Bonnie Collins met death at the hands of Lee Walker in the commission of a robbery.
Verdict of death at the hands of Lee Walker. During the commission of a robbery.
And coroner, the boys have been talking it over, and we'd like it to go into the records that the coroner's jury congratulates Chief of Police Artie Burton for his prompt action in killing the man who murdered Bonnie Collins.
I'd like you to know, Chief Burton, that the citizens of High Springs consider your prompt action most praiseworthy.
Oh, shucks, Mr. Judson. I only did my duty, that's
all. Judson, another batch of telegrams for Artie.
Well, don't open them now.
Oh, quite the contrary. We are going to open them now. Here, Abe, you help me. Come on, boy, help us open these telegrams. Let's see. Congratulations to you and your community.
Another hero has been added to police roll of honor.
Florida should be proud of Chief of Police Arthur Burton.
Would you consider position training candidate?
Previous justice I've ever known. Congratulations.
Now, what do you think of that? What do you think of that, Artie?
Shucks, I told you I was only doing my duty, that's all.
You're too modest, Artie. Now, what do you think about it, Mrs. Burton?
Well, I'm mighty sorry about Bonnie Collins, but I'm glad Arthur was there to see that she got quick justice.
You said something, Mrs. Burton. You know, Mrs. Burton, I wouldn't be surprised if they made your husband mayor before long.
Oh, go on, Landy. What are you talking
I'm not
about?
One for politics, but I can tell you would get a good, honest man for mayor and my husband.
That's
a
stop, Mrs. Burton.
Well, boys, I guess we ought to be going and let Artie and his missus see something in their own home.
Yeah.
Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night.
Did you hear what they said, Ma? Mayor. Gee.
Sure. Why not?
I got no more call to be mayor of this town.
Oh, that's the door. More telegrams, I suppose.
Well, now, you sit right down, Ma, and I'll answer. Good evening, Chief of Police Burton. That's me. Won't you come in?
Thanks. Chief, I'm John Logan of the State Auditor's Bureau.
Oh, yes, yes, Mr. Logan. Sit down.
Thank you.
Excuse us, will you, Ma? This is a little business.
All right, Artie. I'll just straighten up the kitchen.
What can I do for you while you're here, Mr. Logan?
I've just been down to town hall. Glad you locked up Bonnie Collins' office after the murder.
Yes, I thought it might be best since she was city treasurer and all that. Would you like to have the key?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that's why I came here tonight. Sorry to bother you.
Oh, not at all, not at all. Here's the key.
Thanks. Oh, congratulations on solving a murder case so quickly.
Well, I don't deserve any credit. Just happened to be there.
You didn't recognize this murderer, this Lee Walker, at first, did you?
No, I just saw a man beating Bonnie Collins to death, and I let him have it.
Lucky you were there. Shot him twice in the back, I understand.
That's right. It was the only place I could get a crack at him.
I see. Well, Mr. Burton, I'll be getting along. I'll probably see you at town hall tomorrow.
Oh, sure, sure. Anything I can do to help, why, just sound off.
I will. Auditing books after a murder isn't such a nice job. But anyhow, we'll balance the accounts all right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Come on in. My name's Logan. I'm from the State Auditor's Office. Just going over Miss Collins' books.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll be getting on.
Wait, just a minute.
Yes, sir?
You work around here?
Yes, I'm a janitor.
I see. What's your name?
Tom Smith.
Tom, you know, we auditors sometimes have to ask a lot of questions.
Sure. Not about the murder.
Oh, no. It's just a little money matter. You see, there was $112.33 in Miss Collins' cash box.
Uh-huh.
Now, this colored fellow, Lee Walker, who was killed while robbing and beating Miss Collins, was he around town hall here a good bit?
Sure. Lee was kind of a town character. Sold them voodoo charms, conjure books, and dream tickets.
On the numbers?
Sure. He's pretty lucky, too.
Did Miss Collins play the numbers?
I don't know.
Did you buy any of those conjure books or voodoo charms?
I don't know.
Tom, did you help carry the bodies out of the office here?
Yes, sir. Both of them. Helped to get Miss Collins in the ambulance and helped carry out Lee Walker after the coroner's jury gave verdict he murdered Bonnie.
Which way was Walker's body lying?
Lying almost flush with this side of the counter.
Which way were his feet?
Right near that doorway.
And Bonnie Collins' body was lying around the corner of the counter by this desk, is that right?
Sure is.
Now tell me, you're the Tom Smith who's down here on the payroll for $12 a week?
That's me.
Do you know this Lee Walker very well?
Sure. Known him for years. Say, Mr. Logan, do you think that you could get me a raise?
I'll try to get something for you, Tom. I won't promise you what it'll be, but it'll be something.
Well, you here already, Logan?
Oh, sure. Been here since 7 this morning. You know what these audits are.
Well, all official jobs are like that, I guess.
It's later than I thought. How about some lunch?
Sure, I know a good place. It's about 2 blocks from here.
Fine, that's fine.
How's the examination coming along, Logan?
Ooh, looks like there might be a little shortage. Not much. But otherwise, everything seems in order.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Bonnie was a fine girl. Regular, honest.
Yes, I know, but I haven't been hearing such nice things about Lee Walker. I understand he was a gambler. Sold chances on a number lottery and all that kind of thing.
Yes, that's right. But I always figured he was a harmless sort of guy. Never thought he'd try to steal.
I'm just wondering if this Collins girl was mixed up in any of these lotteries.
Bonnie? I'd stake my head on it. Why, she was absolutely above suspicion, I think.
Afraid to be positive now, aren't you? Well, come on, let's eat. I'm starved.
Anything else, Mr. Burton?
Nope, I've had enough. How about you, Logan? Want some dessert?
No, thanks. I've had enough.
That'll be... You want one check, Mr. Burton?
Sure. My treat today.
Oh, no. Nothing doing, Burton. I want that check. Here, give it to me.
No, sir. No, siree. This is on me today. Here's the money, girlie. And bring me the change in quarters, will
you? Yes, sir. I know.
I'd like to have a few quarters in my pocket.
Here you are, Mr. Burton. Here's the change.
Oh, thanks. Well, now, you just watch how I make these quarters work for me.
Hey, what's he going to do?
Play the slot machines, I guess. He does that every day. But Mr. Burton isn't as lucky as Mr. Hunter. Mr. Burton never wins.
Well, he doesn't expect to, does he? The odds are 1,000,000 to 1 against him.
I guess they are.
Oh, who is Mr. Hunter?
Him? Oh, he owns most of the slot machines in town. He's a gambler.
Oh. You know Mr. Burton well?
Oh, sure. Gives me the shivers when I think that I spoke to Bonnie only 5 minutes before it happened.
Oh, you did?
Yes. And I think Bonnie had a feeling something had happened to her.
Oh, why do you say that?
Well,
I tried to get her to go to lunch with me, and she wouldn't go. First she said she had an appointment for lunch with her mother, and then she said something about an important telephone call.
Hey, finished, Logan?
Yes, yes, just waiting for you. Well, come on, let's go. I have plenty to do yet this afternoon. Oh, how'd you make out?
Oh, no luck as usual. These slot machines don't believe in giving you a break.
Well, I guess you're right about that. Mr. Hunter.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Hunter, I'm going to get right to the point. My name is Logan, State Auditor's Bureau. I'm down here because I've got to examine the books that Miss Collins kept.
Well, I've got nothing to do with this office.
Yes, I know, but I just heard about something that does connect you with her death.
Connect me with her death?
Yes. I understand that Miss Collins tried to phone you a few minutes before she was killed. According to the records of the telephone company, she called Cherry 243. That's your number, isn't it?
Yes, that's what if it is.
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out. There was no answer at that number, and Miss Collins then called Maine 388.
That's my office.
Yes, I know that. Now, Mr. Hunter, do you know why Miss Collins was so anxious to reach you?
No, I don't.
Where were you at that time?
I don't know. Besides, what business is of yours where I was?
Mr. Hunter, what is your business?
I'm a merchant.
Did you know Lee Walker?
Sure, everybody knew him.
He worked for you, didn't he?
Yes, in a way.
And it's... Oh, hello, Burton.
Hello, Artie. I'm glad you came. Hey, who is this guy, anyway? What does he want?
He's auditing the books.
Is that so? Well, what in the places did he make me come down here? And what business is it of his what I do or where I was when Bonnie was killed?
I told you, Mr. Hunter, I've got to make a full report. Of course, if you don't want to cooperate with me, I can't force you to.
Sure, Logan's right. You don't have to tell him anything you don't want.
Then I'm leaving. Don't like this whole business one bit.
Looks like our friend is annoyed with me, doesn't it?
Sure does. He's a pretty powerful man in this town.
That's so? What does he do?
Well, he's a gambler. Runs the number game in town. Owns slot machines, and he has the right connections.
I see. Lee Walker worked for him, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Sold lottery tickets for him.
Oh, Burton, you can do me a favor. I'm going to be through with my examination tonight, and I'd like to present it to the town council for certification before I leave. Will you notify them?
Sure. What time do you want them?
Oh, 8 o'clock, I guess.
Oh, they'll be there. If you want me, I'll be in my office across the hall.
Thanks, Burton. Hello, operator. Get me long distance. Hello, hello, long distance. I want the governor's office. Yes, that's right. In a hurry, please. Well, hello. I'd like to speak with the governor. This is Gask. Yes, that's right. Well, hello, hello, governor. Yes, this is Gask. What's that? I have to complete a report. Tonight's the night. Yes, tonight. Positive. Practically the whole town will be here tonight, and I'm going to break the news to them. Yeah, Bombshell is right. Now, Governor, if you want me this afternoon, I'm going under the name of Logan. Yes, that's it. John Logan. What? Well, vicious. Yeah, but don't worry. It'll be... Oh, I'm sorry. I can't speak to you anymore now. Goodbye.
People, now will you please give me your attention? Yeah,
we will.
I called all you people here tonight for a very unusual reason. I was sent here by the governor of this state to investigate Lee Collins and Lee Walker. Now, please, please. In the first place, I want to introduce myself. My name is Gask, Buddy Gask, and I have no connection whatsoever with the State Auditor's Bureau. Now, for obvious reasons, I use the name of Logan, and for obvious reasons, I concealed the identity of my position. I am a special state investigator. I shall ask some of you certain questions tonight. I expect truthful answers. If any of you do not cooperate with me, I have the authority to place you under arrest. Now, Miss Clark, please. Miss Clark, you told me that you spoke to Miss Collins just a few minutes before she was murdered.
Yes, sir, that's right.
She told you something about making an important phone call.
Yes, sir. I wanted her to take lunch with me, but she said she had to telephone somebody. She didn't say who it was, though.
Thank you. Now, gentlemen, I checked the phone calls made from this office, and I learned that Miss Collins called two numbers. One was the number of Mr. Hunter's home, and the other Hunter's office. Mr. Hunter.
Well, what do you want to know?
Where were you at the time Miss Collins phoned you?
I don't remember.
You earn your money gambling, don't you?
I earn it honestly, if that's what you want to know.
Lee Walker worked for you, is that right?
Yeah.
Did you send him here to see Miss Collins the day she was killed?
I don't remember.
Uh-huh. How well did you know Miss Collins, Mr. Hunter?
Just a friend.
Did she ever gamble, to your knowledge?
No, sir, never. Bonnie, Miss Collins is a fine girl.
All right. Oh, Dr. Turner.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Turner, you're coroner of this county, is that right?
Yes, sir, that's right. Been coroner for 28 years.
And you examined the victims?
Yep, that's right.
This is your report, isn't it?
That's right, yes, sir.
According to this, your findings indicated that Miss Collins was killed by that wrench over there. Is that right?
That's what it says.
And Walker was shot twice. That's the cause of his death, correct?
Yep, that's right.
All right, that'll do. Now, Mr. Burton, please. Mr. Burton, you shot Walker when you saw him hitting Miss Collins.
Yep, he was running toward that window when I came in. I shot him.
You didn't want him to escape, is that it?
Yeah, that's right.
And then you called Mr. Chu and Mr. Deloach?
Yeah, that's right. They helped me get the doctor.
Did you see anybody in the corridor when they ran out?
No, sir. Nobody.
You sure? Did you see Miss Clark or Mr. Hunter anywhere?
Well, I'm not sure, but I don't think so. I guess I'd recognize them if they were there.
You knew Walker, didn't you?
Oh, sure. He hung around there often.
But when you shot him, you didn't know it was he, did you?
He was running away from me when I came in, and his back toward me, and I just plugged him.
All right, Burton, thank you. Mr. Chu.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chu, you were outside the building when Miss Collins was killed, were you not?
Yes, sir. I was talking to Abe Deloach.
And when you heard the shots, you ran in to see what happened?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chu, did you see if... just a moment. Oh, Burton, will you please open that window? It's very hot in here. Mr. Chu, did you see anybody in the corridor or outside when you heard the shots?
No, don't believe I did.
You knew Mr. What's the matter, Burton? Can't you open it?
No, it's nailed fast.
Well, all right, we'll be through soon. Now, Mr. Chu, you knew Mr. Hunter, didn't you?
Yes, sir, I knew him all right, but I didn't see him around here.
Well, tell me this. After the shots were fired, you ran in here with Mr. Burton, is that right?
Yes, sir.
He told you that he had shot someone.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, he said he'd shot a strange man.
And then you turned him over and saw that the man was Lee Walker.
That's right, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chu. Thank you very much.
Mr. Gass, state investigator or not, you have no right to embarrass these citizens. Besides, we have our own chief of police here who caught Walker red-handed and killed him. Our investigation disclosed that Walker had robbed and murdered Bonnie Collins. Why, if it weren't for Chief Burton, Walker might have got away.
Now, Dr. Turner, I'll get to the point immediately. Bonnie Collins was not murdered by Lee Walker. But the person who did kill her is here in this room right now. Arthur Burton, you're under arrest for the murder of Lee Walker and Bonnie Collins.
What, are you crazy?
You must be mad, Gas. Chief Burton's one of the most respected men in town.
This is a real breach.
Quiet. Be quiet, all of you. I know what I'm doing, and before I'm through with you, every single one of you will be convinced. Burton is guilty of murder, understand? And I'm going to prove it.
The governor's going to hear of this, Gas. You can't come into our town.
Shut up, every one of you. I'm doing the talking now. O'Reilly. Riley.
Tony.
Yeah. Draw your gun and stand at that door. If anyone tries to pass you, shoot. Now, all of you, listen. Every person I've spoken to has insisted that Miss Collins was absolutely honest. Audits of her accounts in the past have also indicated that very thing. After checking her books since her death, however, I find that her accounts are approximately $150 short.
Walker robbed her, you fool!
I'm going to talk in, Burton. Walker robbed her. What happened to the money? You told us that you shot him just as he was putting his hand into the cash box. Is that right? Well, why don't you answer me, Burton? You also said that you shot Walker because he tried to run away through that window. Gentlemen, my investigation yesterday disclosed that that window cannot be opened. You recall, I asked Burton to open it a little while ago. You all heard what he said. It's nailed fast. Now, Walker was as familiar with this office as any of you are. All of you know that. If he knew that that window couldn't be opened, why should he have tried to escape that way?
If that's your proof, Gask, you ought to be struck.
Now, wait till I'm finished, Dr. Turner. Let me finish. Walker never tried to run through that window. Now, the next step that really happened. Simply this. Walker faced this door and Burton shot him. How do I know? Because Lee Walker was not shot in the back. That's how I know. Burton faced him and shot him down in cold blood. That's why Burton was careful to say that he'd shot a strange man. Strange man, get it? That's how he put you off the track. Now, why, you ask, did Burton want Walker killed? I'll tell you. Your police chief is a gambler. I myself saw him lose several dollars in the slot machine this afternoon. I can prove that your honorable chief of police loses as much every day. You know the salary he receives. Figure it out yourself. See if he can afford any losses on the modest salary you pay him. And now for the next point. What happened to the money that was stolen from Bonnie Collins' cash box? I'll tell you. Burton stole that money. Because he wasn't able to put it back, he planned what he thought was a perfect crime.
That's a lie, a dirty lie. I never stole anything.
Man 200 in a hurry, operator. Hello, hello, Record. Give me the desk. Hello, Joe. This is Graham. Yeah, on a Burton case. That's what that buddy Gass said. Now listen to this. Gass dug up a surprise witness. The guy testified that Burton offered to get a Bonnie Collins job for $50. Said it was going to be vacant. Yeah, he shouldn't have offered that job a month before he killed her. It showed premeditation today, he said. And here's something else that's hot. The governor sent Gass down, not his crack investigator, because Bonnie Collins' mother wrote him and said her daughter's death was suspicious. Yeah. And another thing. Hunter admitted that he knew Burton was a big gambler. Seemed that Bonnie was friendly with Hunter and told him that the big shot police chief was swiping dough. Yeah, nice guy. And that isn't all either. Gass found a witness who saw Burton motion to Walker to come into Bonnie Collins' office. He cracked Bonnie in the head of the wrench and then shot Walker to make it look like a perfect crime. Yeah, that's right. Perfect for Gass and a DA. And after the jury brought in the verdict of guilty, you should have heard that judge go to town when he sentenced him. Yeah, life. Well, sure, I know it's too good for him, but what do you want me to do? And if we're going to make that guy mayor, how do you like that?
Again, when truth and justice triumph, in the name of the law.
Thank you again for listening, and please don't forget to follow, review, leave a 5-star rating, and to share the podcast.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.